folks, you're listening here to Where Your Health Matters with Dr. Tony on Joy 1250. We come to you each and every Sunday evening from 8:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. And again, this week, we're going to be pleased to have with us here in the studio Vita Oshel, a holistic nutritionist and author of the book Healing and Prevention Through Nutrition, and as well as a very inspirational speaker who's going to be taking us back to the basics tonight. And we're just so pleased today to have in the studio with us a guest. I think it's her third time around since we've been on the air. And, you know, every time she comes in here, you know, we just learn so much. And, you know, I've been myself trying to practice some of the things that she teaches me, you know, and I got to tell you, I've just taken these just incredible steps towards my energy level in terms of things like, you know, drinking these green smoothies especially, and just trying to eat raw foods more frequently. Anyway, we have Vita Oshel. She's the founder and editor and the main writer of the online publications Evolving Beings and Evolving Wellness. She's also the author of her newly released book, Healing and Prevention Through Nutrition. Vita holds degrees in science and education, as well as certification in nutrition and natural health. She was a high school science teacher for 7 years, during which time her interest, passion, and research led her to become deeply integrated in the world of natural and holistic health, as well as nutrition. Vita knows the preventative and healing power that nutrition holds, especially the power of a natural, wholesome, plant-based diet. Thank you, Vita, for joining us again here in the studio.
You're very welcome, Dr. Tony, and thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we have lots to cover tonight. Whenever I hear you talk, it just gets me to reflect on these things, and I'm going, wow, I wish I would have these little reminders every day, you know?
Oh, I so hear you, because it's so easy to forget, right? And we get caught up in life in different parts of our schedules and routines, and it's easy to forget to get out and, you know, get those few minutes of sunshine at least each day, or get that different kind of quality of air, where in the cities, it's hard. We have, you know, the odd tree, right? And
right.
Lots
yep.
of cars and lots of things that produce pollution. Whereas when we do get out into nature, the, you know, balance changes, right? And the scales tip in favor of more natural environments that are extremely beneficial for our health, not just on a physical level, but also on a mental and spiritual level as well.
Yeah, and one of the things that a lot of cities have been trying to do is to, you know, develop their green space,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, everybody's about this green space, and let's, you know, preserve things like in Toronto, the Humber Valley, and or try to, you know, preserve the headwaters, and let's say northern, just north of the city in Caledon, that kind of thing. And it is very, very important, because as we build these monstrous cities with all this concrete and pavement and stuff, we don't realize that we're actually doing a lot of harm to ourselves, because then we just become very a smog-filled society with no filtration because of the natural, I guess, the plants that help us out, and it's just not very good.
Absolutely, and it changes our climate and weather dynamics in ways that I think we're just now starting to realize the impact of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because when we've got, you know, a great space is filled with lots of asphalt and concrete, that changes the dynamics of all of that changes, and I think we're starting to really understand the impact we've been having on the environment and how we can change to kind of bring things back to basics.
So is that why it like on hot days and it's all muggy and why things, it actually feels like everything is sucked out of you in a city because of the lack of green space?
Absolutely. There's so many different reasons, I guess, in our modern society why we do feel so drained energetically and physically, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, you know. And when it comes to the spaces that we have in the cities, for example, they can definitely have an impact on our health and well-being. For example, if you're wondering about our, you know, inner environment in terms of our air and things, they're not necessarily, I would say, sucked out of us, but all of the things that are coming into us, that's what makes the bigger difference. So mm-hmm. it's all of the air that we are breathing with the toxins. It's the fact that, for example, the concentration of oxygen isn't as pure, but there's so many other things that are all playing a role in making us feel, for example, more down, more depleted of energy, etc.
Right. You know, it's you know, that's a great segue, because the topic that we're going to be talking about today is back to basics.
Mm-hmm.
Avita, there is so much information every day being offered on television. It's on, you know, we watch Oprah. I mean, she's absolutely huge. I mean, she is, it seems, the media nowadays. On radio talk shows like Where Your Health Matters here with Dr. Tony. On the internet, in newspapers, magazines. On all these things, they try and say, well, this is what's good for you and so forth. Today we were just talking about this concept of back to basic. Can you tell us a little bit about what does that mean?
Well, that's such a great question because I think there's just so much information today thrown at us from so many different sources. And as wonderful as it would be that we could get more empowered and more educated on so many of the different topics, what I find happening to a lot of people is they actually get the opposite effect. They get disempowered, they get confused, and they actually start to sort of shut down because there's so many conflicting sources saying things that, you know, one day butter's good, the next day margarine's good, don't eat eggs. So we hear this all the time from different sources that we trust. And then what happens to each of us is then we, again, sort of go down our own paths of thinking, it's just all too confusing, it's too hard, or whatever the case may be. And so when going back to basics, what I try to encourage people to do is we really have to make eating, especially nourishing ourselves, simple. We used to always know how to do it. Every single animal on this planet knows how to feed itself, knows how to keep itself healthy and nourished. And for some reason, lots of reasons, as we know, over the last several decades, we have sort of lost our way. And I like to actually say more forgotten, because I don't think it's actually lost in us. I think we've just slightly forgotten what the basics of how to keep ourselves healthy are. And so when it comes to things that we hear, of course, we hear, okay, you have to get your nutrients. But a lot of people don't even know, well, what are the basics? What are we talking about here when it comes to nutrients? And that's when words like macro and micronutrients come into play.
Right. So this and that was one of the words that came out, this concept of the macronutrients or the micronutrients. Now, but those sound like really kind of complicated terms. Is there a simpler way of saying what that means?
Absolutely. Basically, when we think of eating and why we eat, it is really to nourish ourselves, right? We know to stay alive, to keep our bodies healthy, and to help rebuild, for example, all the cells that we lose each day, etc. So we know that our food supplies us with two things primarily: calories and nutrients.
Okay.
And there's a big difference in what your food supplies more of or less of. And so when it comes to nutrients, which is, well, I guess, what we'll talk about first, there are two groups of nutrients, generally speaking, the macro and the micronutrients. Now, as sort of fancy as they might sound, it's really simple. Macro, we can think of large or big, and micro meaning small. So from a biochemical level, generally, they are bigger molecules and smaller molecules, but right, from a practical everyday level, macronutrients are the ones that we're going to eat more of or lots of, and micronutrients would be eaten in small quantities. And it's not that we want to actually keep them small, but it's actually that we only need very little of them to keep us very healthy and actually to give us everything we need.
Okay, so do macro or bigger nutrients or micro or smaller nutrients, do they overlap with calories? Like, do nutrients have calories?
Yes. And okay, this is where, so if we look a little deeper, macronutrients, there's three of them, and that would be our fats, our proteins, and our carbohydrates. So this is where the bulk of our nutrition comes from each day. And then the micronutrients are typically our vitamins and minerals. And of course, today we've got the phytonutrients and the antioxidants, which kind of gather around in that area as well. But generally speaking, we have five nutrients that we can think of. So again, it would be the proteins, the fats, the carbohydrates, the vitamins, and the minerals. Now, from the macronutrient group, the proteins, carbohydrates, and fats, each of these are worth a different amount of calories.
So the macronutrients then are the things that we always talk about, our fats, our proteins, our carbohydrates, and the smaller nutrients are the things that we say are the vitamins and minerals. Now, would it be accurate to say it's usually the vitamins and minerals that people seem to be lacking whenever we eat? We don't, that's all we always want. We seem to be like, what the word that we use is overfed but undernourished. So, you know, maybe we're getting a lot of carbohydrate, but we're not getting, you know, or a lot of fat, maybe low protein, and definitely maybe zero to, if any, vitamins and minerals.
That's right. And so when it comes to vitamins and minerals, even though we only need very little each day, and when I say very little, it's if we compare them to, for example, if we need for every 100, let's pretend, 100 grams of carbohydrates, we might only need 1 gram of vitamin A.
Right.
And again, this is a very, very just a simple example.
Right.
That's not the actual numbers that I'd like people to stick by. But it's just to show that, you know, vitamins and minerals are extremely powerful, and so they only come in smaller amounts into our bodies. That's, for example, the ones that are going to do the different functions, but then the carbohydrates, the fats, and the proteins are the ones that are also going to supply them,
right,
as well as, of course, the different foods that are going to have them, are going to give us our energy, and that's where we would be relying on for some of the calories.
So and the energy comes from the fats, the proteins, and the carbohydrates.
That's right.
Does energy come from vitamins and minerals as well?
Generally speaking, no.
Okay, so those are kind of more of these other things that we need to keep us healthy. So so everything that we see on a cereal box or on a bread bag or a granola bar, they all claim, you know, they have these vitamins and nutrients and so forth. What does all that mean?
Very good question. And so the nutritional labels that we see on food products really were meant to help us make better decisions. But again, for most of us, those numbers are not explained. And in my personal approach, I really don't like people getting too caught up on numbers, because I find, again, that gets away from the basics. You know, feeding ourselves right, being healthy, staying healthy shouldn't be about numbers. It should be about, if we're eating natural, wholesome foods, balanced from a variety of different sources, we will be covering all the nutrients that our bodies need. But so often I find in our society, people get too caught up on numbers and actually are making their life much more complicated than it needs to be if we only stuck to more of a basic or simplified way of eating. So when it comes to, for example, these nutrients, in processed food, the biggest difference, and this is why when people keep hearing, oh, processed food is bad for you or it's unhealthy for you, why? The biggest reason, the number one reason, is processed foods tend to be very high in calories but very low in quality nutrients. And this is where we have to also differentiate that there's healthy and unhealthy carbohydrates, healthy and unhealthy fats. And we can, again, break that down further. And even proteins. You know, people are not used to hearing, what, there's healthy protein and unhealthy? Technically, yes, there are definitely healthier sources of each one of these. So one big thing that I like to always leave people with is not to vilify any one food nutrient category, because so often we hear in our society, oh, this is the zero carb diet or the zero fat diet. Well, none of these work, because they're actually, you know, condemning a whole nutrient group that we must have for optimal health.
So basically, when people say, you know, I want to get my high protein, low carb, that's not necessarily just a good thing per se. It's more, no, what you need to do is eat right.
Yes.
And one of the things that I think is perhaps overwhelming for a lot of people listening in, and I know it's overwhelming for myself, is every time you go and, like, I mean, the, you know, our food, our government makes us, you know, put down everything on labels. And it is about numbers. And all you sit there and you read everything on there. And by the time my eyes just gloss over, because everybody has, you know, something. And you basically, you look at a bottle of Fruit Loops and you sit here and you say, wow, after all of reading all this, it looks like it must be healthy. You know, because they're obviously giving full disclosure. Even McDonald's is giving disclosure on the nutritional value of its food. But I can't believe overnight that it's gone from completely non-nutritional to nutritional. Before the era of processed foods, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't we always just have natural food?
Yes, absolutely. And we knew how to eat. We knew how to, nourish ourselves much better than so many of us do today. Today it's become almost a challenge, a struggle for people. You know, people say, oh, I don't have a degree in nutrition. How am I supposed to know how to feed myself? But we really all do. When we take, you know, and kind of look beyond the boxes, the packages, the processed food, and so many of the numbers and so many of the claims from this place or that place or this expert or that expert, and just get back to what real food is, whole food that comes from Mother Nature, it actually is very easy to feed ourselves correctly.
Folks, you're here listening to Where Your Health Matters with Dr. Tony. We have nutritional expert Avita Oshel as our guest. Avita, what do you mean by whole foods?
Excellent question. Because again, anytime something isn't clear to us, we tend to sort of, you know, take it our own way that perhaps won't serve us in the long run. And the same thing goes for whole foods. What exactly is a whole food? These would be foods that are unrefined, unprocessed, or as close to, if not completely, in their most natural state as possible, which means they haven't been broken down, separated, or we're not eating isolates of foods, because that's so popular today. We think it's so wonderful that we've extracted this or that out of a food. But the best and healthiest for our body to understand is the food in its whole component. So again, let's get more practical and get some examples. If somebody wants an apple product, well, we could, of course, have apple pie, we can have apple juice, etc., or we could have the most natural source of them being the apple. So an apple would be an example of a whole food. Apple juice isn't. Apple pie isn't. Another example for if we're thinking of some kind of a grain, perhaps rice. Again, if we're eating some kind of a rice-based product, that is not a whole food. Specifically, brown rice would be a whole food, and brown rice that you're cooking, you know, from scratch yourself, not, again, brown rice that has been processed for you. That's, again, closer still, but we want to go as close as possible to the source as we can.
So one of the things that I've been doing is, I mean, I've heard, you know, that, you know, pomegranates are great antioxidants, or it has pomegranates have an intense antioxidant component to them. And so I began drinking pomegranate juice. First of all, why is that bad? Like, instead of eating the pomegranate, and it says, like, it has the label on it, the antioxidant, the highest antioxidant drink, it's that pomegranate juice, it's supposed to be really, is it bad?
Well, no, not at all. I wouldn't say it's bad, but I'd like to throw in one quick thing for people to have a better idea about the labels, because you've mentioned now such a great point about what the labels say, especially on the front of the package. They really know how to get us interested. They will say, for example, things like zero cholesterol or high in antioxidants or, you know, high in fiber, low in this. And all of that is often, when it's on a package, ways to attract us to what it does have, but also to distract us from other parts that perhaps wouldn't be as wonderful for our health. And so the best place always, aside from a nutritional label, which we can understand how to make better use of, is always, I say, go to the ingredients. And if the pomegranate juice that you are drinking, for example, has no additives whatsoever, and preferably is as fresh as possible, I know that most packaged juices today have to be pasteurized for safety reasons, then it might not be that bad of an idea. But nothing in this case would beat if you got your own pomegranate from the store and juiced it yourself at home, because at that point, it has not just the wonderful benefits that will come with the pomegranate, like high fiber and antioxidants and vitamins and minerals, but also you're going to keep all the live enzymes. And this is something that is missing in almost all processed food, because enzymes are extremely heat sensitive. So pasteurization, for example, will destroy a lot of live enzymes. And those help us digest so much. They help in so many ways. And, for example, as we age, people tend to not be able to digest their food as much. And right. A lot of people in our society suffer from something like cellular enzyme exhaustion, where our enzyme supplies are depleted because they've been used up for all these processed foods, high heat-treated foods, all our lives. So, again, going back to the idea of why raw foods, for example, as much as possible, are such a great addition to our diet.
Right. And I guess from a laziness point of view, you know, the whole concept of I love pomegranates. I just find they're such a pain to try and eat, because they've just got all those seeds in them, right? And so I remember the first time I saw this palm juice come out, I said, wow, this seems really, really great. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Is that okay?
It is. I mean, palm has definitely done great at trying to market a product that's as pure as possible. And if you were going to drink a pomegranate juice, that probably would be definitely the best one on the market. Again, I just always say, check the ingredients to make sure there's no, because so often there could be an added sugar, or in a lot of, there's so many healthy smoothies that are marketed today in bottles, right, or juices, but they do have added things. For example, some as obvious as sugar, but a lot of the healthier smoothies, for example, do have added, for example, apple juice, or they base them on different fruit juices that really are nothing more than sugar. So they're just right. Another name for sugar.
And now that leaves me just, I mean, I just want to just stay on this one for one more, a couple more moments. Is one of the things I've gotten into is there's these little capsules you get in the Shoppers Drug Mart, and they say it's antioxidants, and it's like a pomegranate thing in a little capsule. So I've been taking those because I can't always get a pomegranate. Is that is there any value to that, or am I just wasting my money?
A little value for sure, but is there also some wasting of money? Yes. I you know, all the time tend to say to people, if you're going to resort to a pill, try to go first with whole foods. How can you satisfy this with whole foods? Right. And so when it comes to pomegranates, for example, if you don't enjoy the seeds, or even some people don't like cleaning it or taking it apart, right, because it's a little bit more of a tedious process, we have to know that all fruits are some sources of antioxidants, for example.
Right.
So this is one thing that also happens and comes through different shows or mainstream media, where for, you know, a week or a month, we'll go on this bandwagon of pomegranates are the way to go, or blueberries are the way to go. When in fact, when we eat a balanced or diet based on a variety of fruits and vegetables, you will be getting lots of those different antioxidants that you don't have to resort to pills, because then again, it's an isolated product that's processed, formed for your body to recognize, and it's from its whole form, and then of course it's costing you a lot of money.
Right. So in other words, just eat the fruit.
Yes.
Okay, it'll be a real challenge for me. I really appreciate that. Can you help us to sort out what's the difference between the processed sugars and the sugars that occur in the natural fruits? Are those naturally occurring sugars bad, or are they good, or is sugar not all sugar have an issue?
Well, there's such a great difference in the different sugars that are out there. And of course, we have two main groups of natural sugars that naturally occur in the food we eat, like apples, pears, you know, grapefruit, whatever fruit, even some vegetables, etc. And then we've got the refined, processed, or synthetically made sugars. And there's a big difference in how your body processes those and what effect they have. Generally speaking, at the end of the day, a lot of experts try to sort of, you know, write it off and say, at the end of the day, it's all, you know, sugar, or it's all a molecule of glucose that it'll break down into or change into. But there is a definite difference in how it comes in and how your body's going to deal with it. Because when sugar's coming in with or in the form of an apple, a banana, for example, it's coming in, first of all, with the added fibers. Sort of, you know, it's all perfectly intertwined and mixed together, where when it's being digested by your body and assimilated, your body knows exactly how to take apart to maximize the nutrients out of that, how to deal with it. And of course, fiber slows down the sugar from it entering our bloodstream as fast. This is why apples, whole apples, make such a big difference versus apple juice. Should you be eating whole apples? Definitely. Would I recommend apple juice? No.
Right.
So that's where some of the difference comes in. But sugar is such a huge, huge topic that we can, of course, get into on so many levels. But definite difference, and it could go from, you know, the most highly refined process to the most chemical artificial sweeteners to something very natural, like, again, fruit in or sugars in our fruit.
So the sugar uptake is a lot healthier when we take it in a fruit rather than try and drink it.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Before I move on to talk about sprouting, the sprouted concept and whole grains, so we talk about whole foods, what about artificial sweeteners? I heard these things are toxic.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and you know, so many people still sort of are not too sure what to do with artificial sweeteners. Are they really that bad? Why are they still available? And I do encourage for anybody who's interested in this topic to really look into it, because there's so much now available in terms of information on what is really going on when it comes to artificial sweeteners and the different ones. The most popular, for example, that most people will be aware or familiar with is aspartame. And aspartame, we know today, without a doubt, is very toxic, excitotoxin for our brain and our nervous system, and has, you know, when it digests and assimilates, it could form into formaldehyde-like products. So it's toxic to our brain, our liver, our overall health and well-being. And yet it's in so many products that so many people will readily eat or consume and kind of think, you know, if it was that bad, it wouldn't be available. But it is available, because, again, today it's so hard to link a specific chemical, because our world is so full of different synthetic substances, chemical compounds, etc. So it is very difficult to link specifically, let's say, aspartame to somebody's migraines, because they could be coming from their air freshener, they could be coming from their morning coffee, they could be coming, you know.
Right.
But more and more research is surfacing, and of course the companies who are providing the product obviously don't want some of that research to surface. So there's a lot going on, but they are extremely toxic in many ways.
So the reality is, you're better off just to probably have processed sugar rather than even having artificial sugar, but then you're better off having raw sugar than processed sugar, and you're just better off just eating the fruit.
That's right. Okay. You got it perfectly.
Okay. Now, one of the things that you mentioned earlier in terms of, you know, the unprocessed, unrefined foods, there was this thing, again, going back to even to cereals, this concept of, you know, everybody says, well, they have these great grain cereals. Everything's about, you know, granola. And can you shed a little light on what is a good cereal, or like, and what's this whole notion of whole grain versus non-whole grain?
Mm-hmm. First of all, our society has come a long way, and I'm very happy that we are now more whole grain oriented. However, what whole grain has turned into today is a really good marketing ploy to get a lot of processed food into people and make them think they're eating a healthy product. This is specifically evident when it comes to cereals, box cereals, breads, and several other products, but specifically when it comes to breads and cereals, because people see the big labels, you know, whole grain, and they think, okay, automatically that must be good for me. When the truth of the matter is that when we start to understand what these products are made of, at the end of the day, it is flour. Yes, it is whole grain flour rather right. than refined white flours the way they used to be so often made. But flour, generally speaking, in our body, due to its extremely large surface area, because of course it's ground down to a tiny, tiny powder, right. acts like a sugar in the body. And so what a lot of us don't realize is how often flour products, and this is when we get into some of the unhealthy carbs, act like sugars. And so I encounter a lot of people when I ask them, for example, if they're having problems with their weight or different energy imbalances or digestive issues, I say, you know, how much sugar are you taking? Oh, I don't eat very little, very minimal sugar, no chocolate bars, no juices. But are you eating breads and cereals? Yes. And they don't realize that that is a major source of sugars in their life. And I'm not even talking about the added sugars.
Right.
Because almost every bread on the market today and every cereal has at least one, if not many, added sugars.
Right.
I'm talking about the flour that they're, you know, seeing as the whole grain itself and how it's acting as a sugar and spiking their insulin levels and then leading to all sorts of reactions that lead to weight gain and energy depletion and all sorts of problems. So I do encourage people to sort of see beyond that, that if you're opening your cereal box and if you're not seeing whole grains, but little, you know, O shapes and alphabet shapes and all sorts of stuff, that is not a whole grain. No matter how we spin it, no matter how, you know, the box tries to make us feel good about it, we need to see whole grains. That would be the best case scenario. So if we're down our cereal aisle and thinking, okay, then what should I be getting? Well, the closest we can get to is some of the things. This is why oatmeal, for example, is a little more popular when it comes to really healthy cereals.
Right.
Steel-cut oats, for example, or bulgur, and really whole grains in their natural form. These usually come, like one company that I personally like, and again, no affiliation to it, is Bob's Red Mill. They come in clear plastic bags, and you can see the whole grains inside of them. And this is grain that has not been processed in any way, generally speaking. There's no ingredients other than the whole grain, and that's what I would want to be putting in my body. Again, whole foods as much as possible.
What are some examples of whole grains? Can you give us some example, like what would a whole grain be?
Absolutely. So steel-cut oats would be the whole grain of the oat. The quicker cooking your oatmeal is, the more processed it has been. So I know a lot of people are a fan of the 5-minute oats or right. the 1-minute oats, but you know, of course it's much healthier than your typical box cereal, but still, if you want the healthiest, you go for the steel cut oats or the unprocessed oats. Okay. Another example, or more examples,
where would you get unprocessed oats?
Today the good news is that almost every grocery store will okay. carry some form of okay. steel cut oats or just oats that have been just rolled, but they still will take about 20 minutes to cook.
Okay.
So they're the longer cooking oats. Brown rice is a great example of a whole grain. Quinoa, although technically, botanically, it is a seed, seen as a seed, but most of us understand it and will eat it like a grain. So quinoa is a phenomenal grain. It's a complete protein, wonderful nutrient composition. That's a grain that a lot of people actually still don't know about or don't incorporate into their daily diet. Aside from quinoa, there's amaranth, very close cousin to the quinoa. There's barley. Barley is a whole grain. Buckwheat is another one. Phenomenal nutritional profile. Has nothing to do with wheat. Generally speaking, it's gluten-free, and a lot of people don't incorporate or eat something like that. So these are the grains we'd like to be incorporating or basing any grain meals that we have. For example, if we think of pasta, pasta is very popular in our society next to bread and cereals. Well, pasta is a processed flour product. And yes, there's all sorts of problems with pasta. Generally speaking, it's not the worst food in the world, but it's definitely not the best if you want optimal health, if you want to lose weight, and if you want to have food nourish your body that is of a high nutrient density and low calorie.
Right. One thing is, what does this gluten, this notion of gluten-free mean? You mentioned that.
Well, what a lot of people are finding in our society more and more today is that they have some level of gluten intolerance. Now, gluten is a type of protein that is found in different products that are, for example, wheat is one of the most common ones that people think of where gluten would be. And a lot of grains have gluten. For example, brown rice is, generally speaking, gluten-free. But today they're finding that there's other types of gluten that might be in some of the grains that we used to think are gluten-free. So that's a whole other story. But gluten is basically has been found to be irritating specifically to our intestinal tract. For some people, it's a slight sensitivity. For others, it's an intolerance. And for in the most severe of cases, it's full-blown condition, what is known as celiac's disease. And that is where people cannot tolerate any form of gluten or any products that contain gluten. Now, aside from grains, gluten hides in many, many products today that we wouldn't even think of. For example, soy sauce. People might think soy sauce made of soy. But if we look at the ingredients, most soy has a basis in and or added wheat. And so it would not be gluten-free. So we will know ourselves, generally speaking, if we have some sort of an intolerance to gluten, and this has increased greatly in our society. But in general, it is healthier to avoid wheat products. And I do say that to people quite openly, because wheat has just been so changed and modified over the decades to make it a large global crop commodity that when people started looking why, what's happening when the scientists look into what is going on, why so many people have such an increased intolerance to gluten, some of it comes down to how the wheat is grown, that there's actually almost like a much higher amount of gluten in today's wheat than ever has been in nature before. So anything that, you know, we take out of its natural form usually comes back to bite us in one way or another.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things that's been out there is this whole concept of genetically modified wheat. It seems like all of the wheat fields across North America are using wheat that's not wheat that it would have been 100 years ago, but it's this genetically modified wheat. Is that accurate?
Definitely. Well, there's some parts that are getting more into genetically modified wheat. Some people say that, you know, the way wheat is farmed today, it's not even so much as genetically modified, just they've been modifying it in different ways and making hybrid versions of it, that it's just so unnatural to what it was, you know, over 100 or so years ago. But when it comes to genetically modified, our biggest threat comes from corn, because corn, for example, and soy are the two biggest sources of our food that are genetically modified. And corn is almost in everything. I think it is estimated by author Michael Pollan that it is in over 75% of the products in the average grocery store, anything from corn syrup to cornstarch. It hides in so many different foods, and it has so many different names. So corn is one of the biggies, and as well as soy. So I always say to people, if you're going to eat any corn or soy product, definitely going organic, where we can still trust that it hasn't been genetically modified as much as possible.
Hey folks, we have a caller on the line. Hello, you're here on Where Your Health Matters with Dr. Tony and Vito Oshel. Who's on the line with us?
My name is Adrian. Thank you so much for fielding my question.
Hi, Adrian. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Good, good. You have a question for Avita?
Yeah, I just wanted to, from my experience, I realized that buying whole foods or eating organic foods is extremely costly, as opposed to buying processed and chemically enhanced foods and things. Is there a way to minimize the cost associated with eating healthy? Is there somewhere you can buy or somehow to reduce it? So the average person, I guess, would have difficulty eating very healthy, unfortunately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is actually such a great question, and I always feel a little sad, you know, talking about this, because our society really should be promoting the healthy whole foods that really keep us, you know, we're saying in our politics and such that we have healthcare issues, and of course Canada and the U.S. are both, you know, at fault with that. And there are definitely a few things. One of the things that helps a lot is eating locally and seasonally. That tends to drive prices down a little bit, at least. And when you put in a few of these different solutions, it can add up to many different benefits. So try visiting your local farmers markets. Most places are now popping up with more farmers markets, which is wonderful. Something else which is even better is seeing if your area has a local CSA, and that's community supported or shared agriculture, where you can actually get fresh local produce that normally is organic that is going to come at a fraction of the price. What else is even in the stores? I know here in Canada, of course, in Ontario, we have so much coming to us from the U.S. and specifically from Mexico over, you know, the winter months. Anything from looking at things on sale, of course, organic food does go on sale often. Sometimes, in fact, it can even be cheaper than the conventionally grown. So, for example, I'll give you something for myself. I love strawberries, but I know that during the winter months, organic strawberries can cost something like, you know, $6 for a little package. Well, I won't be buying those throughout the winter. So I'll wait till they are in season, generally speaking, and then I can, you know, maximize the benefits there. Because, of course, we don't have to eat, for example, strawberries year-round. There's so many other fruits and vegetables, right? And then as much as possible, seeing also what it is that and how much you need to eat, because I find so often people are buying more than they need and a lot goes to waste.
Throwing out, sure.
Mm-hmm.
In my house, that's the case, so.
Yeah, so definitely perhaps going grocery shopping twice a week instead of once a week and making sure that everything gets eaten and minimizing processed food, because when you have less processed food and more whole food in your fridge, you're going to tend to pick the whole food and not let it go to waste, because it's often so easy to just grab a package and, you know, let the lettuce sit at the back of the fridge for the week until it, you know, rots. But one more thing that I'd like to add is I personally eat, you know, as organic as possible. Of course, sometimes it's not possible or if you So, you know, you try your best, and I eat, you know, all plants, etc. And my grocery bill tends to be about $80 to $100 a week for two people, generally.
Wow.
So, you know, for some people that's going to be a lot. For some people that's going to be a little. I can definitely even squeeze in with $50 or $60 depending on the food choices. So why I'm sharing this also is because often people might, you know, feel that it'll add up so much. But in fact, it doesn't have to be as bad as sometimes if we compare processed food.
Okay. Yep. That's a fantastic answer. Thank you so very much.
And do you know, where do you normally shop?
Oh, well, normally Sobeys and your...
Is there a better store than another? I mean, I don't... Sobeys compared to Metro versus, you know, like...
When it comes to, for example, the ones you mentioned, Sobeys and Metro, usually they're in the same category, and it's just, you know, one might have tomatoes on sale this week and the other one, you know, cucumbers at the same time. I don't think it's too practical to run around, you know, for five different types of stores, but generally that you can look through flyers, for example, and today we have online flyers to save, you know, on the paper, on the environment too. But at the same time, we can, you know, look into all that to make better choices, and to maybe one week you'll visit Sobeys because there's more on sale. The next week you might visit Metro. Generally speaking, some of the lower end stores where they focus more on bulk, like perhaps No Frills or Food Basics, you know, they can be very good at reducing costs, but they also tend to focus more on processed foods. So, you know, they have great produce sections sometimes, but again, that's where a lot of people go for savings on processed foods.
Right.
Thanks a lot, Adrian, for your call. We appreciate that.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay, have a good night. So that's this, and this is kind of an important thing, because I was always wondering about these things, about in terms of, you know, where to shop. And, you know, it seems like, you know, in our society, it's so difficult to find out, well, what is organic nowadays? Because sometimes I hear, now I it almost seems that the term organic is being thrown about, and it's becoming a commodified term.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the biggest things when it comes to that term is that people get, you know, feeling sort of like a false positive when it comes to almost any food, as long as it's labeled organic. And you said it so well, that it is almost, you know, marketed, commodified in a way that makes us feel like anything, even Kraft dinner, if it, you know, organic Kraft dinner, then tomorrow we'll feel it's a healthy choice. So the first thing is to understand that just because it's organic doesn't automatically make it healthy. When we're speaking about organic, we really want to focus on organic whole foods. So key is organic fruits and vegetables. If you can afford it and if it's practical and feasible, then get into organic grains, organic nuts, etc. And of course, if you eat animal products, then you definitely want to be investing in organic animal products, because there's just so much between hormones and drugs and, you know, synthetic things that is fed and given to the animals. But what organic means generally is food that's been grown in the most natural way possible. And this is where it gets back to basics. Food, the way it's been growing, the way our great-grandparents or perhaps our grandparents have grown it for millennia. So what we're thinking of is food that has not been grown with synthetic fertilizers. A lot of people don't realize that synthetic fertilizers are used to grow their food. Why is that a big deal? It's a huge deal. It goes into the soil. And then remember, the food that is growing for you is sucking out a lot of its nutrients from the soil. So it's picking up all of this stuff. And then, of course, it's ending up in our bodies. Another key about what is organic is not genetically modified. So as much as possible today, anything that is labeled and certified organic is not genetically modified. And one of the biggest two is the idea of pesticides or anything like an insecticide, fungicides. Generally speaking, organic food that is certified, again, is not treated with any chemical or artificial pesticides, insecticides, etc. So they would use different farming methods like integrated pest management or ways that would perhaps yield less, or, you know, sometimes the apples might be smaller or have a little bruise or, you know, a little wormhole left, but that's okay. We really, you know, have gone away from that, and we almost have plastic looking food today, but we have to understand that is what we really, really want. So that's the gist of organic. So again, just because it's organic, it comes in a package, doesn't mean it's better for us or good for us. We have to really, first and foremost, look for whole food, natural food, and then organic as much as possible.
Yeah, like one of the things that I heard is this concept of natural flavor. Yeah, you know, and it, everything. Well, natural flavor. But then I eventually found out that there's actually somebody patented that term, natural flavor. And so it's actually not natural flavor, but it's a term, natural flavor. And so sometimes as I'm watching, you know, kind of going through stores and looking at organic types of foods, I'm going, wait a minute here, I don't know if this is organic or not. And furthermore, they might say it's organic, but how do I know that it isn't next door to a farm that, you know, where they don't do things that organically? And how do you know the soil next door isn't influencing that organic food that you've paid extra money for?
Absolutely. And that's such a great question. A lot of people have that concern, because in today's society, it's true. There's so many conventional farms that spray so many chemicals, you know, from the air, from the ground, etc., that it is a very, very valid concern. And what I say, generally speaking, is two things. One, we are all trying, you know, we can, of course, try to do the best that we can, that no matter what, that food is still going to be of a higher quality than the one next door.
Right.
But second of all is that why certified matters. Right now, generally, when you look at all the food, even the personal care products that are certified organic, there is a certification either by the USDA or some other third party that has certified it, because there is some level of testing. So
right.
Farms get visited. For example, I believe that for a farmer to start an organic farm, the soil has to have a certain amount of not being, you know, treated with anything for something like 5 years. So there's different criteria that people who really, really want to know the details, specifics of what organic is, there's details of what is tested and how these farms are tested in terms of what the soil is like, you know, how many years has the soil not been treated with something, what kind of fertilizers are being used, perhaps the vicinity of what's around and what are the chances of, you know, contamination and things like that. So in our world today, ideally, it might not be perfect given all the contamination possibilities, but it is definitely the best that we can do, other than, you know, perhaps growing our own in our own backyards.
Right. And so the fact is that it is important then to look for that organic stamp,
mm-hmm.
on certain things. And one of the things, I mean, just in my own life, I noticed when I was like, you know, we were going out all the time eating and going out every other day to restaurants and probably eating foods that weren't all that great. You know, just going to the regular grocery store, one of the things that I noticed in doing the household budget is that the budget is actually down this year versus last year, as we've actually switched to more organic types of foods and so forth, because the overall kind of approach to eating healthy actually saves you money.
And this is actually a great point to add as well. And this is why sometimes when it comes to money and how much people spend, I find that it really goes two ways for people. Some will claim that, wow, their budget has, you know, gone down and things have gotten, you know, perhaps it looks cheaper, etc. And for others, it will be that their bill has actually gone up. So it really depends on, I guess, what and how much people are buying, perhaps where. So all these little factors. But there are, as we already discussed, ways that we can minimize this. And also, what I kind of say to people is do an experiment. Buy, you know, 1 week, be very diligent, and buy all the processed foods that you would normally buy, all the meat, cheese, etc., if you're eating animal products, from just your typical sources. And the next week, try to buy enough food from, you know, more plant-based, whole natural sources, and see the difference for yourself. Because normally, when we do eat healthier, first of all, plant foods are almost always cheaper than animal foods. Processed foods, even though there is such a big stigma that yes, they are cheaper, like there's some processed foods we can't compete with, like, you know, those 99 cent hamburger deals and things, right, like that. But when we look at a bag of rice, for example, or a bag of whole beans, we can't like a processed food cannot compete with that, and your grocery bill can be cut down a lot when you consider how much that can feed you, etc., over, you know, the course of a week or several weeks, etc.
It almost seems, though, too, it's not so much the cost of eating more naturally or more organically, but it almost seems as it's the time that it takes to actually sit and eat an apple versus just, you know, pour a glass of juice and drink it, to take the pomegranate pill, mm-hmm, you know, rather than try and, you know, grapple my way through a pomegranate. It almost seems as though this notion of eating healthy or eating right, it's a lifestyle thing, and it's that our world has become so fast, mm-hmm, that our world is processed, and because our world is processed, we are eating processed foods. And if we were to try to get back to eating whole foods or getting back to basics, it's almost like we have to slow down our lives.
Absolutely, and what great points. And there's a film that I do invite anyone who's very interested in what we're talking about tonight to view, Processed People. And it just touches upon so well on what you just said. It's true, our world, our lifestyles have become processed, and so processed food seems to be the natural fit into these extremely fast and highly unconscious lifestyles, where when we start to slow down, when we start to realize what's important, and I say the key word, priorities. What are our priorities? Because I remember somebody said this to myself once. They said, you know, what would you rather invest in? Where would you rather see your money go in? Prevention today, spend a little bit more on that grocery bill, or treatment 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now, when you're going to be paying for your medical bills. And of course, here in Canada, we're a little, you know, perhaps luckier and a little spoiled, because a lot of our health bills don't have to be personally funded. But in the U.S., people are starting to get this, and get this very quickly. I invest with my, you know, monetary finances today into prevention, or I can be paying much more in the future for treatment.
Yeah, and again, it's difficult for people to understand that everybody has a disability, for example.
Yeah.
It's one of the things I work with my students at Tinale University is try to get them to say, hey, you might be young now, you might be, you know, 18, 19, 21, 22, but every one of you may have a disability, or 90% of you have a disability. You're just not going to realize it until you're 60. Right, you see what I'm saying? And so I guess there's not that conscious awareness for a lot of people to understand that, you know, we pay for it now. I just went out for lunch yesterday with a couple of friends who are a little bit older and wiser than myself by maybe 20 or 25 years. And one of the things they said is, you know, they noticed I had a little bit of a hip problem. And the lady said, well, you better take care of that now, because in 20 years, you're going to be in trouble.
Excellent. Yes. And, you know, when we think about our banking, for example, when we are investing our money, we're very particular with what we're going to invest it in and how much or what kind of a return we want from it in the future. We have to start looking at our bodies like that, because our bodies are the most important bank account, if you'd like to call it that, that we will ever have. And so, you know, no matter what people might say that, oh, is organic really worth it, or is eating healthy really worth it, or is it really worth it to do this or that for my, that investment would you like? Would you like to be in debt? Because a lot of our bodies today, technically, if we're thinking of our body as a bank account, are in debt. They don't, right. They don't have, you know, enough of the resources to give us to lead healthy, vibrant lives. Or would you like to be on the plus side? And how much on the plus side? And getting excited about that, I think, is so key.
So it's almost as though, you know, we are a debt-ravaged society in terms of money, but our bodies are actually in debt, and we don't even realize it because we're actually paying now for what we won't be able to pay for later.
That's right.
From a body point of view. Maybe it's this is a wider kind of issue that we need to be aware of in terms of our society that has us buying into, you know, maybe one of the things that people say, well, we're just struggling to survive. You know, we can't really afford to eat properly because we're struggling to survive. The reality is that I guess anybody who's really struggling, that's already part. I know that in my own life. It's like I ate my dinner on the way here in the car. But as we are looking at this whole notion of we need to slow down, it just seems so important. And I know I've been trying that in my own life for the last couple of years, because it just seems like, you know, but you know, it just seems like every single person, our society or our socialization has us hardwired to just spin our wheels and you know, get as much done as fast as done and try to make as much money as possible and do this and do that. You know, I'm not sure why we do it.
Mm-hmm.
This is perhaps, you know, but again, I can assure you that it seems like the marketing people out there want us to behave that way.
Oh, yes, and they're doing a wonderful job. I mean, if there's somebody to congratulate, it's definitely them, because they're doing a wonderful job of, as I call it, making us hooked on the obsession of more.
Right.
We want, you know, more money, more in terms of square footage of our houses, more in terms of the car we're going to have, more in terms of everything, more time, more anything. But at the end of the day, we are losing out on the quality of our life and our happiness. And this is what we are getting less and less of. So it is, as you mentioned before, a lifestyle. When we approach healthy eating, it is not about making excuses, because we can make all the excuses we want. But if, you know, I say to people, if you're going to start making excuses, then perhaps, you know, revisit healthier choices or healthier living at a different time when you realize that at the end of the day, there will be no excuses. It's about you getting really honest with what's important for you and how are you going to work around to make that happen as best as you can.
I would argue in my case, it seems that our bill has actually gone down in the bigger picture of things, because we're not, you know, going out and wasting money on silly processed foods or on overeating out in places where foods cost a lot more. But the concept of the price of gas now, as we all know, is just really, really expensive. So it would make sense that a lot of foods coming from where they have to be transported in from long distances actually are going up. And I mean, all the economists are showing that the cost of foods and everything in the grocery store are going up by, you know, 15, 20, 30% because of the price of gas. It would seem that if we do eat locally, those prices, I mean, well, it doesn't, you don't have to take as much gas to get food from Niagara up to Hamilton and Toronto.
Oh, yes, for sure. And this is why there's such a big movement and such a big awakening in our societies right now. And it is really happening globally for anybody who's aware of it, to more of a local community-based structure of living. And people are slowing down. As much as, you know, if we're standing in the middle of a city, it may be look like, oh, there's nothing changing, nothing's happening. But when we look at our planet, there is lots of change happening and people are getting this, because we're realizing that at the rate we're going, it is, quite simply put, very destructive to
right.
the planet and to ourselves. And so there is, again, as I said, that movement towards local community-based living. This is why CSAs are becoming more popular. And these are, again, the community shared agricultures where people can buy in to a farm. And every week, for example, either you pick up your box of produce or they deliver it for you, depending on where you live and what farm you sign on with. It's a wonderful way to cut down on your bill and feel so good about your choices that you're not just helping yourself. You're setting a wonderful example in your community, but you're also helping the environment, the planet as a whole. And you get to know your farmer. You get to know where your food is coming from. This is something that we've also lost. So again, it's wonderful to get back to basics.
So are these community shared agricultural markets, are they in the Toronto area and the Hamilton area and the Brampton area?
The great news is that there's at least one that I can think of in all of these areas. So if there's one, I'm sure by now there's probably more than one. And it really just takes quick internet search, put in CSA, Greater Toronto Area or Ontario, and I'm sure now there's even websites that will start to put them all together for people to see that there's actually lots of choice.
And are these like farmers markets? Is that what they are?
It's really where the farmer... It can come to a farmer's market, but it's a farmer or a group of farmers, for example, who come together to provide you, specifically if you sign in to the program, with your own box of fresh produce, whatever grew that week on their farm or farms, with your own fresh produce. And, you know, the boxes are whatever they had that week. Sometimes people get a little bit of a choice. But generally speaking, anybody I've talked to and myself, who I am actually myself enjoying a CSA now for the past two summers, it's just such a wonderful experience all around.
Right. Now, what happens in the winter months when the farms are in the winter?
Then, unfortunately, we go back to the grocery store.
So it's not a perfect solution, but
yes.
it's at least a half-year solution.
That's right. It maximizes, like, at least from some start in May, most start in June, right into October at least. So at least about half the year, you are getting local, you know, the freshest, usually it's organic produce delivered or picked up again. You can pick it up yourself.
Now, are there similar types of markets where for people who actually want meat, like to get like cows, and is that available as well? Are you aware of?
Oh, definitely. Some of the CSA farmers actually provide not just produce, but they actually have their own organically raised or free-range livestock. And that can be part of your CSA if you choose it to be.
So eggs and meats and cheeses?
Perhaps, probably too.
So you can actually get a real holistic food experience by going in and looking at these community shared agricultural. What are they called? Community shared.
CSA is the easiest way. So CSA, and it sometimes stands for community shared or community supported agriculture. Some people know it as one or the other.
Okay, community shared agriculture. Okay, we just want to thank Avita Oshel. For joining us here in the studio, Where Your Health Matters with Dr. Tony. I hope you've enjoyed listening and in terms of how to get back to some basics and how to perhaps, you know, look beyond those labels that are very, very confusing on a lot of the foods processed. And now they're just putting them on everything, it seems like. But it doesn't mean that it's giving us the answers that we need. Based on what Avita has talked to us today about is the fact that we really got to get back to learning what it is to eat those foods that are real, those fruits that are real, the organic foods. And definitely checking out these community shared agricultural movements, and you could check that out, Community Shared Agricultural Farms Ontario. Just Google that on your local on your own internet. That way you can make your own choices and try it. And then drop us a line at whereyourhealthmatters@gmail.com and let us know how it goes for you in terms of perhaps accessing whole natural foods. Avita, we just want to thank you for joining us here again on Where Your Health Matters. It's always such an amazing learning experience and really inspiring to let us know that there is hope in this land of poor nutrition and overfeeding.
Thank you so very much for having me. It was such a wonderful pleasure to share with your audience again.
Okay, thanks, Avita. And folks, join us each and every Sunday here on Where Your Health Matters on Joy 1250. We just every Sunday evening, and also on the internet for those, www.joy1250.ca. We live stream there as well. And I just want to thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Tony, saying good night from Joy 1250, where your health matters.